Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
Good morning, my friend.
This is Nick Wright. Gentlemen, great to see you. We've got a great show for you today. What?
It's Nick's birthday. Happy birthday, Nick Wright.
Oh, thank
Nick
you.
Happy Wright. 35th
My
birthday,
apologies. You're right.
Nicholas
it's
Wright.
You got the year and everything right. Good job, Chris Carter.
I had to do some research on you, man.
Okay.
Fresh
thank you
cut.
Much.
You look
yes.
good. You're in a great mood.
Oh, yeah.
Mood.
Great much looking suit it. Outfit there. Nice.
Thank
Amen.
You.
Amen. Skipping this morning. It's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. There's no place I'd rather spend it than right here.
Well,
they offered me the day off.
What about
the casino?
Oh, well, that's Saturday.
Among other hot topics on the
program. See you on the outskirts
today.
Of Philadelphia, everybody.
Patrick
about 12
Mahomes.
Hours.
He dumped us that quick.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are about to get a little better. Todd Gurley might have hit a breaking point, but we start with Gurley's team playing on Thursday Night Football. Tonight on Fox, Jared Goff and the Rams taking on the Seahawks. Both teams 3-1 right now. The Rams don't mind traveling to Seattle, where they've won 3 out of the last 4 meetings. What they could do without is Russell Wilson's continued hot play. Wilson has a 72.9 completion percentage, good enough for best in the league. Both teams looking to get an advantage in the NFC West. All right, CC, I don't mean to be dramatic, throw hyperbole around, but is this a must-win for both teams?
Man, we're getting into some critical situations with teams, especially if you, through the first quarter of the season, if you didn't necessarily play as well as you'd like to play, if you've given away a game, if you lost a game that you didn't think that you should lose, and that's what both these teams. People were worried about the Rams. Are they going to have post-Super Bowl hangover? Now, the signs of a post-season hangover, typically, they don't come to around the middle of the season. But I do think that with Jared Goff, with Sean McVay, people have caught up to their system. People are more familiar. There are less players running wide open. Everything, the throws are more contested. The running scheme has been seemed to be found out. And then here you have Seattle. Nick was on Seattle before the season. I just thought it was just going to be a regular Seattle, a little 9-7. They might be 10-6. Nick, from the beginning, thought they were the best team in this division. He thought that the Rams would come back to the pack, but they lose at home to a Teddy Bridgewater New Orleans Saints, not a Drew Brees Saints. Like, you don't mind losing to the Saints, but if you look at that situation, the first game he takes over as a starter, you lose at home, a game they can't be proud of. It is a matchup. Both of these teams are built to face one another. When the Rams front office, when they look about the division, it's no disrespect to the Cardinals and the 49ers, but when they look at a model, they look in Seattle and say, that's the team with Russell Wilson that we're going to have to beat. And the Rams with their defense. They won't get back to the Super Bowl without their defense improving. Aaron Donald, I know, Aaron Donald's the best defensive player, one of the best players we have in the league. But I think this first part of the season, he's been doing a lot more freelancing, losing his gap control, leaving big gaping holes. We know they don't have good linebackers. We remember that from the Super Bowl. So now it's left that defense. How good is that defense? Jameis Winston scored 50 points against them. As much as Seattle likes to run the ball, Nick, as much as you hate it, They are ground and pound. They are from the 80s, 90s version of the NFL facing the Rams team on a short week. How did the Rams team get back on track, Nick?
Yeah, Seattle runs their offense like old Marty Schottenheimer Chiefs teams, which is not that surprising because the offensive coordinator in Seattle is Marty Schottenheimer's son, Brian Schottenheimer. They're going to try to just run the ball, and try to have it close late and see if Russell Wilson can make some magic.
So we can't blame it on Daryl Bevel anymore.
No, can't blame it on Daryl Bevel. It seems to maybe be an organizational philosophy where the organization seeks out coordinators that will run that style of offense. To answer your question, Jenna, I don't think it's a must-win game for either team because they're both 3-1, but I do think this game has an enormous air of importance for both teams because we just have, and I think a lot of the national media has somewhat disregarded San Francisco, in part because of their schedule and in part because they didn't play last week. So they were 3-0, but then they didn't play last week. We haven't seen them recently. What do we really make of them? The week one game, people said, they won. That's because Jameis gave the game away. Then they dominate Cincinnati. But San Francisco's sitting there undefeated. The loser of tonight's game will be in third place in this division going into their week six games. And in the NFC this year, I don't think anyone can say, well, we'll just go get the wild card. I think there's going to be an 11-win team that does not win the division in one of these divisions. In the NFC, when you only have three teams right now with a losing record, your only clear path to the postseason is going to be winning your division. Falling to third place as the loser of tonight's game would is a big spot to be in. And I'll say for the Rams, to me, the Rams have more question marks at the moment because we don't know who they are. And I don't know if they know who they are. And if you can't rely on Todd Gurley, you mentioned questions about the defense, you've got to rely on Jared Goff. And Goff has to play a clean game tonight. He's got 20 turnovers in his last 12 games. Little point of comparison, the gold standard in the NFC, Aaron Rodgers, has 20 turnovers in his last 38 games. So Jared Goff's been turning the ball over almost twice per game, dating the last three quarters of a season that he's played. He's got to play a clean game tonight in Seattle, where we know the crowd is going to be absolutely on fire.
It's exactly what I was going to say on point. If you see these two teams both at 3-1 and you take a deeper dive, one team is just so much more consistent and reliable. The other one right now, who came off a season where they were reliable in what they were doing, seems to lack an identity right now.
Yep.
Seems to have obvious questions with that running game. Seems to have questions, albeit, you know, recent ones, with the quarterback. How do you make good on that if you're the Rams?
Well, I just believe it could be one of those seasons. We've seen teams like this before that they've been on a couple-year playoff run. They're young. People predict them potentially to be a Super Bowl, represent the NFC. But you struggle. How healthy is Todd Gurley? Sean McVay, right now, is he a difference maker? Does he have a change-up pitch as he enters, I think it's his fourth season as the head coach?
Third season as the head coach. Fourth season for Goff, third season for McVay.
So does he have a change of pace? And Aaron Donald, can he get this defense to play the type of defense that we have seen them play over the last couple years? F those things, yes. They can get their season turned around. But you got to look at San Francisco and consider them to be legitimate. And you know Seattle is going to be there. Nick makes a great point. You better try to win your division in NFC because it is stacked. If you look at the NFC North, you got the Vikings, the Bears, and the Pack. And then you go
with the Lions sitting there, by the way, at 2-1. There's only three teams right now in the NFC that you can cross off. You feel like Washington can be crossed off. Arizona can be crossed off. And we had been saying the Giants can be crossed off. But I got to give the Giants credit in that they right now have two wins. And there's one other losing team in the NFC whose name I'm forgetting at the moment. But there's everyone in the conference is 2-2 or better except for three teams. And so you can go through the division and say, there's four teams out there. Oh, Atlanta, the disappointing Atlanta Falcons. But even the Falcons, you see the Falcons on your schedule. You're not like that's an easy win.
No.
And so one other thing for the Rams for tonight. Jadeveon Clowney had his best game yet with the Seattle Seahawks this past week in their domination of Arizona. The Rams offensive line is not the same unit it had. In the first 2 years under Sean McVay, and Eric Mangini made this point, he's right. You had all five starters the same each of those two seasons. You lost a couple offensive linemen. It hasn't been as productive. I know whenever a team is struggling out of nowhere, that is the first place you look to. Mm-hmm. I think with the Rams, it applies. And with Clowney and that Ziggy Ansah and that pass rush for Seattle, that could be the difference in tonight's game.
You want to watch the game with me for your birthday?
There is nothing I'd love more, Jenna. So, you're welcome to come over to the house.
Awesome. So that's going to happen.
Appreciate that.
All right. Let's get back to football. Talk some Chiefs. Their offense already quite good, leading the league in most points per game, most passing yards per game, best quarterback in the game. So how do they get better, you ask? How about adding Tyreek Hill? The Pro Bowl wide receiver returned to practice yesterday for the first time since his collarbone injury. And Patrick Mahomes says he and Hill will be on the same page in no time.
I don't think it'll take long at all. We've worked all offseason, and then obviously working in training camp and everything like that. And then having the guys that we have around is we just kind of rotate guys through and get guys reps. And so I think just having him out there and being able to just pick back up where we left off will be something that'll be easy to do. Having him back, and when he gets back, I mean, we'll be able to utilize him and these other guys to really expand our offense, take it to another level.
CeCe, this is an offense in Kansas City that you'd say, well, they don't need any tweaking. They don't need any additions. Mm-hmm. They're doing great as is. So what does a guy like Tyreek Hill, what does he add to the Chiefs' offense?
Well, there's still some concerns with Kansas City and not concerned about their defense on their offense. When you get the lead in game, especially late in the season, how are they going to be able to protect those leads? Are they going to be able to rely on a running game to be able to do it conventionally? What Andy Reid has shown us in the past, He's going to throw the ball to be able to keep the clock moving. He's not going to play the conservative. You get the what we call a four-minute drill. You get the ball with the lead, and you're trying to milk out those last 4 minutes or take 4 minutes off the clock late in the fourth quarter to be able to take that time off the clock so that opposition can't go up and down the field. Typically, teams that throw the ball, as much as Kansas City throws the ball, you don't have a good four-minute offense. You don't have a way to be able to run the ball to be able to milk out the clock. When Tyreek Hill is there, now I'm not talking about giving him the ball in a run, but it's for your running game. He provides things that no other of our elite wide receivers provide, because you can literally put him in the backfield and you can put him as a returner. So Andy Reid can script without the ball going through the air. So you got bad conditions. Tyreek Hill is guaranteed to touch the ball at least 10 times. He's going to have 4 to 6 punts a game, and Andy Reid can put him in the backfield 4 or 6 times. So it's harder to key on a player like that than DeAndre Hopkins,
right,
than Julio Jones, OBJ. These guys, you know where they're going to be for the most part, and Tyreek Hill is a special player. He's the most explosive player that we have in the NFL. And the way that they utilize him in the offense, I think he's going to come back even better than before. I thought this season was going to be better than last season. He got the injury in week number 1. But seeing this offense and seeing it function at a high level, it also might make him have a little more respect for the offense, because they replace some of his productivity, because you can't replace all the things that he does, Nick.
So this is not where I was expecting to go with this, but I think you make such a great point, I want to elaborate on it, which is, can the Chiefs get the requisite first downs when they have a lead to where the defense does not have to take the field again? Last year, in the 14-point comeback that the Chargers did on national television, I think it was Monday Night Football, against the Chiefs, where they ended up going for 2 on the final play of the game. What happened in that game was Chargers scored a touchdown to cut it to 7. Chiefs got the ball back. They end up going 3 and out. They cannot get – they only need one more first down. Cannot get it, and the Chargers get the ball, and all of a sudden the Chiefs lose the game. The only game this year where it has been in the balance – there have been 2 games where it's been in the balance late. One is the Lions game, where the Chiefs actually had to come back. But the other one was the Ravens game, where you had Lamar Jackson rush for a touchdown with 2:01 left. The 2:01 is important because of the 2-minute warning aspect. And the Chiefs needed one first down to win that football game. Now, they got it via Patrick Mahomes throwing the football, because they did not trust their running game to be able to go grind it out on the ground. It was risky, because if that goes incomplete, then the Ravens get the ball back down only 5, and you can lose that football game. The ability to grind out the clock by handing it to Tyreek Hill, or by the de facto handoffs where he's running across the formation and do that little shovel pass that counts as a pass, but that's basically a run. That, I think, is an excellent element he adds. So that's on what you're talking about. As far as big picture for the offense, we haven't seen Tyreek Hill in this offense yet. We saw him last year, but Patrick Mahomes is better than last year. Last year, they didn't have Mecole Hardman, a Tyreek Hill mini-me version of him. DeMarcus Robinson was not the player that he is, and I think Travis Kelce is playing at the highest level he's ever played at. And so when the Chiefs lost Kareem Hunt last year, I said the player on the team that I think they could not afford to lose, other than the quarterback, obviously, is Tyreek Hill, because of how much he opens up. Now, they've been fine the first month of the season without him, but he's the most talented player on their offense other than their quarterback. They're 4-0 without him, and to have all that speed, to have he and Hardman and Robinson on the field with Kelce, the problems it's going to present for defensive coordinators, even though they're already number one in all these categories, it just went up exponentially.
When we talk about the Chiefs, the question becomes, well, who could stop their offense? We thought maybe it was the Baltimore Ravens, and clearly they weren't able to do it. So now you look to the Patriots. Who would have the edge there, especially with Tyreek Hill coming back? It won't be, maybe it'll be this weekend against the Colts. But when you look at the Patriots defense or that Chiefs offense?
Well, I haven't seen a defense. Like, we'd have to go to some of the greatest defenses, and we don't know where the Patriots at the end of the season, where they're going to be. We know they're going to be elite. We know they're going to be in the top 5, but are they in that 1 or 2 spot? Kansas City, right now, there is no defense for what they're doing. They added Shady McCoy to the mix. So you imagine Shady McCoy, Damon Williams in the backfield, Kelce out wide, Sammy Watkins playing at the best level he's played at since he's been there, and then now I bring Tyreek Hill in and I move him in the slot. Who wants to face that? Now, Jamie Collins has played outstanding since coming back over from Cleveland. He was with New England earlier, and I believe that he gives them some variety they didn't have, opposite of Dante Hightower. But both of these guys are 6'4 in the 250 range. They cannot cover the backs of Kansas City. And with Patty Mahomes, which I'm not going to say he's playing the higher level, he's a guy that's just comfortable. He's more comfortable in NFL games because he's seen more defenses and he's had success. So who would want to face that? I would say it's early, very, very premature. But right now, I have to give it to Kansas City because their trigger guy is the best player that we have in the league.
Well, and Tyreek Hill, again, in that particular matchup, I think people remember the playoff game. Well, Belichick does what he does better than any coach in NFL history, which is take away your best option when Tyreek was held to one catch for 42 yards. But Tyreek Hill has played the Patriots in the regular season twice, once with Alex Smith as the quarterback, once with Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback. In those games, he's averaging 7 catches, 140 yards, and has scored 2 touchdowns. For both of these teams, I feel like at the end of the day, most Patriots conversations come down to the Chiefs, and most Chiefs conversations come down to the Patriots. They are going to have to be at full strength. If Tyreek Hill had suffered this injury late in the season, going into a Patriot game, that could tilt the balance, even if he wasn't a huge factor in that playoff game. You mentioned Jamie Collins. Dante Hightower is a linebacker who's dealing with an injury. If Dante Hightower is not out there when they play the Kansas City Chiefs, that could tilt the balance. This is, right now, statistically, without question, the best defense and the best offense, and they are the two teams, of course, faced off in overtime of the AFC Championship.
The problem for Belichick right now is, Jenna, those combination coverages, he likes to put the number one corner, Stephon Gilmore, on the second receiver. Well, who do you put him on? You put him on Sammy Watkins, because right now Kansas City has 3 number ones. Sammy Watkins has proved he can be a number one. Kelce is the best tight end in football. He's a number one. And we know Tyreek Hill, you got to respect the money in the last 2 seasons, how he's played.
Right.
Unbelievable. He's a number one.
Saquon Barkley was jogging at Giants practice yesterday, just 10 days after suffering a high ankle sprain, and head coach Pat Shurmur refused to rule him out for Sunday's game against the Vikings. CC, bad idea to rush Barkley back, especially against that Vikings defense?
Well, 2 weeks is about the earliest that you can come back. I mean, he's a freak athlete, Jenna. Even the movement exercise and stuff he was doing yesterday was phenomenal after hurting it 2 weeks ago. I would be shocked after seeing yesterday's video that he does not play against the Vikings. Yes, he's going to play against the Vikings, force that 8 people in the box, give Danny Dimes some free throwing lanes on the outside. I would be shocked after seeing the video yesterday. You asked me this yesterday, I've been like, no, I believe he's going to take another week off. 3 weeks would be the perfect amount. And then I saw him bouncing around yesterday. Man, I mean, he's an incredible athlete, too.
For a skill position guy that relies on change of pace and change of direction, a month is a quick recovery from a high ankle sprain.
Yes.
The fact that he could be back after only missing one full game would be remarkable. Listen, some guys are just built differently. See, you had a high ankle sprain, 10, 11 days later?
Yep, came back in 2 weeks.
Right, did a $170 in the first half.
It's a lot easier to play wide receiver than it is to play running back because I can anticipate where I'm going. As a running back, someone flash on you, suddenly you got to try to recruit the muscles. You try to push off the back of that ankle. But I did think that he was going to be back and more effective than the Tyron Smith within Dallas because the position that he does play. Look at those legs, though.
Man.
I need to get me a pair of shorts like that.
Look, I can't stop looking at him. So thick. Onto the Rams just 2 years
You know what his nickname
ago?
Is, Jenna?
What?
Thickness.
Todd Gurley was named
naming people. Thickness.
Don't tell me.
Offensive player.
As long
as
they keep rolling this TV, I'll name what I want to. Ain't that right?
Today,
Silent Assassin.
Today, Gurley looks like a guy who plays on offense. That joke would have been so much better had it just played out. No longer the centerpiece of the Rams game plan. Gurley is coming off a game where he had a career low 5 carries, a rumor of his arthritic knee holding him back, and a multitude of questions on the daily. Todd Gurley's starting to get frustrated.
You had a good game against Seattle last time. What do you remember about that game?
I only remember it was last year, so. New year, new game.
Alternating series, is that a player's call or is it strictly a coach's call? And how much of a coach do you have? Or do you have, I'm good to go right now.
I think I've asked you to, you asked this question before, so take the answer I gave you last time. I don't remember you.
Todd Gurley is subscribing to the less is more philosophy very clearly. Nick, what do you make of Gurley's frustration?
I watched that whole thing yesterday, and I felt it honestly made me a little sick to my stomach for him. That's not who Todd Gurley's ever been. Some guys are super uncomfortable in front of the media. Some guys just don't like talking. I'm just here so I don't get fined. There's a reason Todd Gurley's one of the NFL's leading pitchmen in advertisements. He's got a great personality. He's got a great smile. He always had seemed to be having fun.
So what do you see in there?
I see a guy who knows what Chris knows. That what Chris has been saying is that he's damaged goods. He knows it. He's going to have to answer these questions. The only enjoyable part of Todd Gurley's job, I would imagine, is every week when the direct deposit hits. And once you, he's been rich now for a couple years. It's not like all of a sudden he wakes up every Friday, he's like, oh, well, at least I'm rich. He's normalized the wealth. He's a rich guy who's living the life of a rich guy. So the money doesn't feel as good as it would to someone who wasn't rich before, and then all of a sudden, and so he has to do this. He has to give answers that he can't tell the truth to. Ask himself, wait, am I ever going to be the guy I once was? And he probably knows the answer to that, but doesn't want to answer that himself. This is a brutal spot for anyone. At that age,
25?
To be past his prime? To have peaked in your life's work? Before your 26th birthday? So that's what I saw yesterday. People can say he was a little rude to the media. I don't care. This guy's dealing with things bigger than this, and there's nothing you can say. There is nothing he can say there other than what do you want? Other than tell the truth, which I don't even know if he wants to tell himself right now.
No, and this is something that athletes go through. I try to train athletes that one thing we all got in common: we're gonna leave here. You're gonna leave this locker room. They're gonna put that jersey typically on someone else. Someone else is gonna be wearing number 30 with the Rams in a couple years. But it's hard to have these conversations about your overall health. Because do I send a message to the opposition that I'm hurt? Do I send a message to the organization that I'm hurt? Because there's only two people that really know. And that's Todd Gurley. He knows he's hurt. And the organization knows he's hurt. Why? Listen to their messaging over the last year. Listen to last year when they rested him. Why did they rest him? Then the next game, his workload went up. Then after that, he couldn't consistently play 2 weeks in a row. So this offseason, what do? Not free agency. You can't go out and get a free agent. They went out in the draft. And that's how you do it.
Top 100 pick.
Third round. That's a high draft pick. And you bring someone like that into the locker room when you know you're having conversations with the organization. Don't you think they talked to Todd Gurley before training camp? He said, Todd Gurley, you know something, man? We like you, man. You're one of the most popular guys in the league. You know what we're going to do for you this year? At training camp, you're only going to practice every other day. No, they were like, man, you know the workload. Your knee can't take it. He knows what he's doing in the offseason is not what he was doing 2 years ago. So it's a tough situation. The truth can't be told. And just like Cam Newton said, listen, I'm tired of telling people, oh, I'm okay and everything. The first game of the season said he shouldn't have been out there. Week number two, he said he shouldn't have been out there. Now the reality that he's hurt, he's finally fessing up, telling the truth. And it's hard when you're in those locker rooms, when you got a lot of money on and people are trying to get a game plan for you. I'm not going to help people develop that game plan by telling them, yes, my arthritic knee, it's not getting any better.
And what makes this to me so much more torturous for the player than a typical injury is it's not a typical injury. It's not that Todd Gurley in week 16 last year got a hit to his knee and tore his meniscus and he is still recovering from it. It is a condition. It is not an injury. It's a condition, and that is different because you don't typically see guys in any age, at any, whether they're sports or not sports, hey, guess what? My arthritis cured. That's not a thing. And the only thing that possibly could make it at least lessen is an enormous amount of time off, enormous amount of rest that you simply can't take in the middle of an NFL season. So I think Todd Gurley, what you saw yesterday was a player who emotionally is dealing with his football mortality at a way earlier time than he ever anticipated he would have.
And then he has to come off a game where he has 5 carries and then explain himself to the media. It is definitely hard all around. All right, let's move on to America's Game of the Week. You got the Packers taking on the Cowboys in Dallas on Sunday on Fox. Aaron Rodgers is 6-2 in his career against the Cowboys. And though A-Rod is operating under a new offense and might be without his top target, Davante Adams, Cowboys linebacker Jalen Smith still wants everyone to know they're going up against, quote, the same Aaron Rodgers. CeCe, what should Dallas's plan of attack be against number 12?
I would dare him to run the ball. I don't believe that Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, I believe this is the most difficult game for Matt LaFleur in his young career. How do I go against this Dallas defense where I got to have some type of ball control? I got to be able to protect Aaron Rodgers. I don't have my best receiver. I was trying to develop some other receivers, and they're not developing, and I don't have a tight end that's really a tremendous threat, especially outside the red zone. Jimmy Graham is a threat in the red zone, yep. But as far as threatening the middle of the football field, so they're playing shorthanded. So I would dare him to try to run Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones had his third best game as of his career against Dallas, rushed for 125, 19 carries. That's the only way they're going to be able to protect Aaron Rodgers. I believe Dallas has too many rushers, and I do believe that they will get the edge on Aaron Rodgers. That's how I would go after him. I would go after him, dare him. I would dare him to run the ball. I would play nothing but coverage. I mean, I only have four defensive linemen, and I'm playing coverage, and I'm daring him to try to run. Because I don't believe Aaron Rodgers nor Matt LaFleur have the patience to methodically run it for 4 yards, run it again, throw a little screen pass, dink and dunk. I don't think that they can do that. See, most people would think that, you know something? Man, I'm going to go after Aaron Rodgers and blitz him. Don't do that because you make the throws and make his decision easy. If you put seven guys in the box, you play bump and run. I know exactly where to throw the ball compared to if they're in zone, how do I fit this one in there? What's the receiver going to do? Because I don't believe Aaron Rodgers and the backup wide receivers have any type of chemistry to be able to win a game like this one.
Hey, you mentioned playing zone, and if you're not in zone, you double Marquez Valdes-Scantling and dare any of these other guys to beat you. Marquez Valdes-Scantling probably doesn't have to be doubled, but he's the only receiver that Rodgers has any rapport with that Davante Adams is out. And say, okay, Geronimo Allison, who doubled his season production with the one catch last week, the big 30-yard, 31-yard gain. I think he had 27
Nick,
yards.
Nick, I can't let you continue with that. We can't put an extra guy on him. We ain't got no respect for him.
So you don't.
I'm only doubling real receivers.
Okay, all right. I was just saying you could just essentially eliminate him from the game plan. You're saying you don't need to do that.
No, absolutely. I would let – if he gets hot in the game, then we'll bring another guy over. But I'm daring him to throw it to a bunch of them. But if he's going to throw it to Valdes-Scantling, you know what he's going to do? He's going to throw it over some linebackers. He's going to have to throw it between some safeties. I believe that right there is far more difficult because if you double them, then I'm singling some people, which make the throws easier for Aaron.
But the point about making them run the ball, listen, this is a team that their two top running backs, and Jamal Williams is injured at the moment. Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams have carried the ball almost 90 times this year for less than 285 yards. So you're talking about 3.3 yards per carry is what you are getting from those two guys. When Matt LaFleur is brought in, you thought, okay, they're spending money on defense. What LaFleur is going to give Aaron Rodgers, though, is a running attack where he doesn't have to simply rely on his arm. That running attack is yet to present itself this season. You mentioned Aaron Jones' great game against Dallas. That was the first great game of his career. That was his rookie season. Mm-hmm. Aaron Jones has been a guy who, prior to this year, had been a good yards per carry guy, but never a workhorse back. The Packers are not used to trying to run it down your throat. But with no Davante Adams is so important to what they do because he's the only receiver, A, that Rodgers has full faith in, mm-hmm. and the only receiver that can, I feel, get himself open. That doesn't have to be schemed open. That can just mm-hmm. win yes. his battle. So if you want to scheme guys open, that's fine. But to Chris's point, if you're dropping seven into coverage, you have to really trust those receivers to be in the exact right spot.
There we go. Yes.
And I haven't seen that trust with Aaron Rodgers because he has no rapport with any of these guys over the last couple years.
Well, Packers are hoping there'll be some semblance of a psychological edge. They've won 7 of the last 8 games against Dallas, including the playoffs. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by Super Bowl champ Chris Canty.
What up, man?
What's going on, bro? How you doing,
sir?
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
Right.
I appreciate it.
A little birthday
that.
Swag, I see.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Right.
I appreciate that. Right.
About those 35 punches you told me you was going to get in
on. No, come on, CeCe. Don't do that, man. I ain't say nothing
I don't
that.
Think I could survive one.
No, he laid his hands on you.
No, they don't think about it. That's okay. For sure. Don't worry about that. We'll take all the guesswork out of that.
Canny, let's talk some Patriots.
My God, that got serious quick.
Their all-time leader in points, Steven Gostkowski, has not been himself this season, missing four extra points. Now we know why, probably. New England placed the all-pro kicker on IR yesterday, as Gostkowski will undergo season-ending hip surgery. Add him to the litany of injuries on this already depleted Patriots roster. Pat safety Devin McCourty knows what this loss means for the team.
He's meant a lot to this team, obviously, for the whole time I've been here. And obviously, you see a lot of that in the record books and all of that, where he has a lot of records for this franchise. But I always speak on how much he means to the locker room. Always keeping it light. He's the best at every little, like, thing and tournament we do in the locker room. So he'll definitely be missed throughout the year, of just having his presence in there.
Kenny, I've now asked this exact question about the Patriots three different times, and all three times it ended up being okay. This time might not, though. Will injuries eventually catch up to the Patriots?
Well, I'm not going to say they're going to catch up to them, but it does add to the degree of difficulty in them trying to repeat as Super Bowl champions. That's what it comes down to. The average margin for victory in the NFL is 3 points. So when you have a kicker that makes kicks from 50 or less routinely, I mean, when you're missing him out of your lineup, that takes away from some of the things that you can do in terms of the overall strategy in the game. And that makes it harder for that Patriots offense, because now you're talking about having to drive the ball further in order to get scoring opportunity. So that's the one thing I'm concerned with, especially with the struggles that we've seen from that offensive line and from Tom Brady early on in the season. We're just trying to wonder, or trying to figure out, what the identity of this Patriots offense is going to ultimately end up being. But without having Gostkowski, it takes away from the time that Bill Belichick might need in order to form an identity that this team can utilize once we get to December and on into January.
Yeah, I'm not going to continue to promote the Patriot way and all the things that go into it, and then allow them to miss players and just think that a guy can come off the street and be as intricate to the team. You know, we talked to one of their captains. You heard him right there. Said, not only on the field, he's a great player, but the things we do in the locker room, the team building exercises, the competition, all these things, he knows how to come to work. And he said, hey, man, he's a funny guy. You need as many funny guys in that locker room in New England as possible, because there are a lot of guys there that are happy. But in a situation like that where you're working hard and guys can make light of it, it's hard to train guys like that. These other kickers are going to be coming in to try out. They're trying out their ability. Forget about the psyche of them. Can they deal with the pressure situations? Let alone New England, when they have home field advantage. We know what they've done with that. Last year was the first time that they had went on the road to be able to go to the Super Bowl in that situation. At home, the kicker knows the wind. He knows in January what he needs to do. He knows the kind of balls they're going to use in practice. All those things. So now, Belichick, does he have to spend extra time with that offensive line? Do I have to spend extra time with the defense because I don't have the coordinator? I lost him to Miami. All these things. Belichick only has the same amount of time as everyone else. So we can't think missing these guys. Andrews, who can't come back. I thought their best offensive lineman. All these things take away from the Patriot way. So whatever team they put on the field in the playoffs, because they will be there, it will not be as good when you don't have all these veteran players who know how to go on a playoff run and know how to win Super Bowls.
In the last 20 years, the New England Patriots have more experience playing without Tom Brady than they do having neither Vinatieri nor Gostkowski.
A question mark at kicker.
Yeah. They had Vinatieri from 96 to 05, and they had Gostkowski from 06 to now. With a brief time, 8 games in 2010, he missed with injury. That's it. That is Vinatieri, maybe the greatest kicker ever, and Gostkowski, who has been a multiple-time all-pro kicker, mm-hmm. who is one of the best kickers of this era. Those are two guys who are in the top 12 all-time in points in NFL history. So like the idea that a team that is built to win with defense and special teams is going to be without its kicker, and it's not a huge problem, I think this is potentially the most substantial injury they've suffered since the David Andrews one. I think this is bigger than the first-round receiver going on IR. I think this is bigger than Isaiah Wynn going on IR again, because there's no Dante Scarnecchia for field goal kickers. You are about to get guys that were on the street for a reason, either lack of talent or lack of confidence. And they have never had a kicker lack confidence since the Belichick-Brady era has been underway.
And I wouldn't be surprised, Canty, if they don't change some of their philosophy offensively. Now, once you get past the 50, do I put that pressure on these other kickers who aren't great kickers? Do I start going for it? All right? So I could see them starting to do that, but... man, New England and how they train their players and the system for which they run and doing everything in that locker room, man, his personality is going to be missed. I know his expertise on the field will be missed, Canty.
No, you're absolutely right. And the quality of the replacement level player at kicker is less significant, or is more significant than other positions 100%. On a football team. So when you're looking at the offensive line, you don't have Isaiah Wynn. You can plug Marshall Newhouse in. Scarnecchia can make it all work. But when you start talking about guys that are skilled players to that degree, like a specialist, when you talk about snappers, you talk about kickers, punters, when you're missing those guys, that hurts that third phase of your football team. And one of the calling cards for the New England Patriots has always been they are going to fundamentally out-execute you in all three phases, including special teams. So that's why I have to be concerned a little bit with the Gostkowski part of it, because if you can't be sound in the kicking game, it's going to be hard to win at the highest levels in this league.
And it is the one, those specialist positions are the one that the coach can have the least impact on. You talk about you lose your left tackle. Well, okay, we'll do a lot of more double tight end set. We'll give him help. We'll figure out ways.
And you have all these years of history of helping people out. This is the only position. There is no help unless they decide to go for it and don't put him on the field, which is not building up his confidence.
Exactly right. And so I don't know who the Patriots kicker is going to be. Nobody does. And that is not something we've said in nearly 25 years. And so when you look at how this team is built, and you're right, Jenna, he had missed 5 extra points in his career before this season, where he's missed 4 this year. There was clearly something wrong with him, but he was still making field goals. And I didn't know he was going to be lost to the season with season-ending surgery. This is now, you look at the two teams that we thought maybe the Ravens taking a step back, or the other team competition in the AFC. Justin Tucker's the most accurate kicker ever. Harrison Butker for the Chiefs is the most accurate kicker in the league since he's come into the league. The three best teams in the AFC had the three best kickers in the AFC. Now the Patriots have some guy. That's a big deal for a team that's going to try to win grinded out football games.
All you got to do is ask the Chicago Bears the value of a kicker in the playoffs. And then on the other side of the coin, look at what the Rams had with Greg Zuerlein in the NFC Championship game. Kicked the game with a field goal.
I mean, that's what you're
talking about when you don't have a kicker versus when you do.
Jared Goff and the Rams taking on Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Both teams sitting at 3-1 right now and looking to get an advantage out there in the NFC West. Kenny, what do you think the key is to this game?
Well, I'm going to start with the offensive line for the Rams. They got some issues up front. They're dealing with some injuries. So if that offensive line isn't able to control the line of scrimmage, both in the run game but also in pass protection, it's going to be a tough day for Jared Goff and that Rams offense. We saw when they become a one-dimensional group that it doesn't look good. It's not pretty. I mean, the Buccaneers forced the Rams to drop back 70 times. I don't know any game plan where a head coach feels solid about his quarterback dropping back that many times and throwing the football. And then you couple that with a career low in touches from Todd Gurley, then, yeah, that's a recipe on how to get beat by an inferior opponent talent-wise at home. So the Rams, they got to get back to what they do best, which is being able to run the football and then operate on play action. The only question about that is I don't know the health of Todd Gurley, so I don't know if they can be dominant in terms of establishing that run game.
Oh, no, Canty. You know the health of Todd Gurley. You just don't want to say it. Because all of us know, if I ain't out there playing, either the team shut me down, but meaning the opposition, they were better than me. But when I'm a running back, I can control how many times I'm going to give them the ball. But we like to hide these injuries. We like to take care of our money. We like to take care of the guys in the fraternity. I understand, bro. We all doing the same. Cam Newton talked about it. Man, I've been lying to y'all for so long. Now the truth comes out. I'm getting ready to sit. Todd Gurley and the Rams organization, they told us the truth. How many times he touched the ball last week, Jenna?
Five.
Okay. Five carries.
What, okay. 12 touches.
12 touches. 12 touches.
Okay. Yep. That lets you know. When was the last time he had a 100-yard game as a receiver out of the backfield? Seems like forever. So I know Todd Gurley's not healthy. Without Todd Gurley, I don't think this Rams team is the Rams team that people have those expectations. I'm more worried about Aaron Donald and that run defense. Is Aaron Donald so sack conscious right now that he is starting to get into some bad techniques as far as leaving his zone uncovered? Man, he was making some nice swim moves in the backfield, and Tampa Bay was creasing the seam. So without Ndamukong Suh, this Rams defense, I want to watch them. Now, I know they can give up some big plays in the passing game, even though they got some big names, but Aaron Donald is a guy that we have learned to respect for such a long time. Let's see what he does under national spotlight. Does he get back to his more disciplined ways, which I'm more used to seeing?
And I'm going to focus on the side that you were focused on, which is how will the Rams front offensively deal with a Seattle pass rush that is getting better week by week? We saw Clowney make his first really big splash play, a one-handed interception. They didn't return for the house. They got Ziggy Ansah. We know how well coached they are defensively, and we know how well that defense typically plays in that building, particularly in night games where they try to set the all-time sound record seemingly every time they have one of these spotlight games. And with a limited best Todd Gurley, with a banged-up offensive line, how good is Jared Goff? Jared Goff's last 12 games, 20 turnovers. That ain't great. That's a problem now. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff, we have seen that when everything is right, he can be as good as just about anybody. Healthy running back, Cooper Kupp out there, all five of his offensive linemen intact. He can carve you up. He can hang 54 on the Kansas City Chiefs. He can go toe-to-toe with Drew Brees. He can do all these things. But you remove one of those pieces, and the recipe doesn't taste quite as good. You remove a bunch of them, and it tastes downright foul. And that's what we're seeing from Jared Goff this year. Offensive line's not the same. Todd Gurley's not the same. And wait, this year? Oh, he just hasn't been good. He had 4 turnovers in that game against Tampa after 3 turnovers in the game against Cleveland. That's 7 turnovers last 2 weeks now. And so when I look at this game, Seattle, you say they're at home, divisional rivals, so the game's more important for them. I don't feel that way. Mm. I feel like the Rams' offense played poorly against Cleveland, got away with one in that one because
they
of
did.
Some poor coaching by Cleveland. The team, you can say, they scored 40-some points. What more do you want from them? Well, they turned the ball over a ridiculous amount of times. They couldn't run the football on Tampa. You lose that home game. You lose this game, you're in third place in a very competitive NFC West, and you start to get a little nervous about that Super Bowl hangover.
Well, I hear what you're talking about. I'm not as concerned about the San Francisco 49ers as
Me
other
either.
People might be.
Sure.
But in terms of looking at this Rams team, it's interesting because you probably have more questions about this team, which actually played in the Super Bowl last year, as opposed to the Seattle Seahawks,
Agreed.
Who were a wild card team and ended up losing down in Dallas. So I think this is an opportunity for them to make a statement and show that they have confidence in Jared Goff and his ability to be able to operate that offense when you don't have a Todd Gurley that's at 100%. But, I mean, you can't deny the fact or the impact that Todd Gurley has on that offense because when he has 20-plus touches, they're 26-8. That's their record. When he doesn't have those amount of touches, they're 9-19. So you see the difference in terms of what Todd Gurley means for that offense. But I think that we have gotten to a stage where Jared Goff is going to be asked to evolve beyond what we've seen his first few years in the NFL. Like, that's why they paid him all that money. Nick, you always use the term force multiplier. Well, it's time for Jared Goff to be that guy because
Correct.
They need him to be that guy. So,
Correct.
I mean, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I know the recent success that this Rams team has had over the Seattle Seahawks. They've won 6 of the last 8 matchups. But Pete Carroll, his team doesn't lose at home on Thursday night. They just don't. And the energy that's going to be in that building, they're inducting Paul Allen into the Ring of Honor. He's the 12th inductee, the 12th man. So there's going to be a lot of motivation on that Seattle Seahawks team. It'll be interesting to see how the Rams respond.
They're just so much more of a consistent team. You don't have nearly as many questions. You know what you're going to get in the head coach and the quarterback, and you know generally who they are, even though it's not that sexy. Whereas on the other side with the Rams, they were this sexy, fun, young, hip, cool team last year. But a big part of that was how they utilize that run game. It's not like he's going to get better. It's not like the arthritis is going to get better. Do you have to move forward now without a big component of that game?
Well, of course, listen, I think the Rams know, game plan wise, they can't rely on Todd Gurley to be great anymore. But I also think the other thing you mentioned, you alluded to, was the coach. And I think, and I don't know why it took defenses this long, but you can only do so many interviews and so many profiles on the brilliance of Sean McVay and how Sean McVay is reading the defense for the opposing quarterback, or for his quarterback reading the opposing defense, before defenses start saying, all right, when does that headset shut off? Oh, in 15 seconds?
Yep.
Well, that's when we're going to change. And that's when we are going to ask, see if Jared Goff, see if his brain can work as fast as the boy geniuses. And thus far, he hasn't been able to do it. We are seeing teams do it, looking a lot more basic until the play clock gets under 15 and then doing a bunch of changes and seeing if Jared Goff can react when the coach's hands are out of it. And he, to me, with or without Todd Gurley, has not shown a consistent ability to do that.
Here we go. On to America's Game of the Week. Packers taking on the Cowboys in Dallas Sunday on Fox. Aaron Rodgers 6-2 in his career against the Cowboys. And though A-Rod is operating under a new offense and might be without his top target in Devontae Adams, Cowboys linebacker Jalen Smith still wants everyone to know they're going up against the same Aaron Rodgers. Kenny, what should Dallas's plan of attack be against number 12?
Well, I mean, to hit him as often as you can. And with the injury issues that they got going on the Green Bay offensive line, Brian Bulaga dealing with something.
Yep.
I mean, Dallas has some favorable matchups. They got Robert Quinn back a couple weeks ago, and he's been a man possessed in terms of how he's rushing the quarterback.
He's really playing some good football.
And being able to bookend him with DeMarcus Lawrence, that could be trouble for that Packers passing attack. I mean, because Aaron Rodgers could be in a situation where he's under duress for a lot of this game. But I think what it ultimately comes down to is which identity is going to win out. The Dallas Cowboys, they were not able to run the football offensively last week. This is not going to get any easier this week because they're going to be missing Tyron Smith. So it's going to be a question of whether or not they can get back to establishing that run game and then being able to have effective play-action passing off of that. Getting Michael Gallup back should help. They're optimistic that he could potentially come back and play on Sunday. We'll have to monitor that as the week progresses. But, I mean, ultimately what this is going to come down is which team is going to be able to execute and stay true to form in terms of who they are and their formula for success.
I think this is going to be an ugly football game. Now, I think it's going to be a great football game, but I don't think it's going to be any 34-31 when we saw these two teams in the playoffs, a shootout down the stretch, dueling game-winning field goals a few years ago.
If there's a team gets to 30, I believe it can only be Dallas.
Because of the lack of offensive
weapons. Unless there's a couple defensive scores or a couple odd scores in there.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think Dallas is going to be hampered by the lack of Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith, who's been the biggest indicator of their offensive success, has been the level of health for Tyron Smith. Not Amari Cooper, not Zeke, not all. Tyron Smith's been the best indicator of how good Dallas's offense can be. And so for the Packers, how do you attack the Cowboys' defense? You're in a rough spot now. I know the Cowboys lost last week, but wasn't their defense's fault?
No.
Defense allowed no touchdowns. Defense went out there and held the Saints to 4 field goals and still the offense found a way to lose that game. Your point on Robert Quinn, I think, is a critical one. Since he's been back, after the team only having 2 sacks in the first 2 games of the year, they have 8 sacks. They have 12 quarterback hits. If you can pressure with 4, that's the key to every great defense. Get home with 4, drop 7. How did the New York Giants beat
rushing
the New
four.
England Patriots?
Rushing four.
In both Supers, the one you were in and the one without you, both of them, it was, we can get pressure on the quarterback without sending an extra man. Your point on, with no Devontae Adams, you're not scared of any of these receivers,
so you
can play zone. The Cowboys, if they can get home with 4, are in the most beneficial defensive position you can be in, which is no receivers that scare you, don't have to send extra rushers, banged up offensive line. All those things speak to, for me, for the Packers, it's going to be about what their defense can do, because I expect their offense to be limited in this football
game. It's also a game that Matt LaFleur, for him to come up with some personal identity. People talking about coaching trees, where a guy comes from and everything. People give Kyle Shanahan credit for him. If not, they'll give my man in L.A. credit for him.
Sean McVay.
But what you know about Sean McVay and Shanahan is it's a lot of disguises and everything, but they're trying to bloody your nose. They're trying to run the football. That's what they do. They do some exotic things passing the ball, but these are running, physical teams. Matt LaFleur, they ran the ball in Tennessee. But was that Matt LaFleur? or was that Tennessee? Because before Matt LaFleur got to Tennessee, they ran the ball. Mm-hmm. Now that he's gone, guess what they're doing?
They're running the ball.
That's how they got in their two wins. They are running the football. So for me, I believe this is in a young career. This will be his fifth game coaching. And he's the only rookie coach that's having some type of success, mm-hmm. him and Freddie Kitchens. He's got three wins. Freddie Kitchens got two. And the rest of the new coaches got zero. So it's been tough on them. Create an identity, Matt. Run the football. You know your line's hampered. You know your receiving core is without one of the best receivers that we have in the league. Run the football and help out Aaron Rodgers. Because if not, this is going to be the first game that Aaron Rodgers, we're going to see with the new coach, that he thinks he's got to be a hero. And when trying to be a hero, I believe it forces you into turnovers, and he's going to be under duress if they don't have a physical presence and run the football.
We talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers. On the other side of the ball, Dak Prescott. I know offense doesn't play offense, but how much pressure is there on Dak Prescott to look across the field at someone he'd like to be a fellow competitor in the NFC when you look at someone like Aaron Rodgers coming off the game you had when everyone was talking about how great you were? If you're Dak Prescott, what do you want to do?
Well, if you're Dak Prescott, you want to put the team in position to be able to win the game, and I think that that means being able to sustain drives and be able to get the ball in the scoring area. If you can just keep the chains moving, if you can get first downs, if you can be good on third down like he's been in the first three games of the season and not what they were last week, I think that this team would be in better shape. But again, it comes back to their overall ability to be able to run the football. So that's what I'm looking at from the Dallas Cowboys offense. Now, listen, going up against that Packers defense, they should be able to get some yards on the ground now. I mean, this Packers defense, they gave up 198 in week two to the Vikings.
Yes.
They gave up 149 the following week and then 176 against the Eagles on Thursday Night Football. So, I mean, they've given up a lot of yards to opposing offenses. So, I mean, if you're Dallas, this is a get-right game in terms of getting back on track with what we want to do offensively. It's going to be up to the Packers defense to be able to get that Cowboys offense off the field and be able to get the ball back to Aaron Rodgers so they can have opportunities to score. Because you know that Jason Garrett is preaching keep away in terms
yes.
of what their mm-hmm. offense needs to do to the Green Bay Packers offense. We want to limit the amount of possessions that Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur
yes.
have. If you can take that number of 10, 11 possessions down to 8 or 9, you have a significant advantage. So I think that has to be the mentality for the Dallas Cowboys going into this.
In the head-to-head, Dak and Aaron Rodgers, and regardless, because we try to protect the quarterbacks all the time. We try to act like, oh, they're not divas and everything. Wide receivers, when we face another great wide receiver, we're trying to have a better day. And quarterbacks, they have the same feeling. Even though they say, yeah, no, I'm not paying attention. Oh, no, they look up the scoreboard and see what the stats are. Now, they know the number one stat is trying to win. But in the couple other meetings that they've had, Dallas and the Packers, Dak has played some good football. I expect Dak, after last week's game, to put more pressure on himself and try to lead his team because he knows, I don't want to give Aaron the ball back late in the game. Regardless of who's at wide receiver, you know that. Aaron Rodgers has made his name in the fourth quarter. But I just do believe quarterbacks, they do have a little personality more than we want to allude, and they know who's on the other side. I know when Brady used to play Manning, I know privately Tom used to talk to his friends how he dominated that matchup there. So I believe Dak in the back of his mind and Aaron in the back of his mind realized that there is a gunslinger on the other side.
And Dak's still waiting to sign that contract. And Dak also, I think the best game Dak's ever played was his rookie year against Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They just came up short. But this is going to be a tough game for Dak. Jaire Alexander, a guy you talk about all the time, one of the best corners in football. The Packers' secondary has been excellent. Amari Cooper could get no separation last week. He had an MRI during the middle of the week, got called for two offensive pass interference penalties. You wonder about his health. This is a game where even if Dak does have some ego put on it, that Zeke's got to be great. Philly beat Green Bay by running down their throat, running over their middle linebacker, running over our friend Kenny Clark. Zeke has to rebound from one of the worst games of his career this past week against New Orleans and have a huge game for Dallas, score enough points.
One more thing to watch in this game, Randall Cobb, this will be his first game against his former team. If anybody has any idea about those young defensive backs from the Packers, it would be Randall Cobb. So maybe that helps in a little bit of a hidden advantage for the Cowboys.
Patriots all-time leader in points, Steven Gostkowski, has not been himself this season, missing four extra points. We might have a reason why. New England placed the all-pro kicker on IR yesterday as he'll undergo season-ending hip surgery. Add him to the litany of injuries on this already depleted Patriots roster. Pat safety Devin McCourty knows what this loss means for the team.
He's meant a lot to this team, obviously, for the whole time I've been here. And obviously, you see a lot of that in the record books and all of that, where he has a lot of records for this franchise. But I always speak on how much he means to the locker room. Always keeping it light. He's the best at every little, like, thing and tournament we do in the locker room. So he'll definitely be missed throughout the year, of just having his presence in there.
CZ, I know there's something to next man up, but does it really not apply when it comes to a kicker who's been as consistent as Gostkowski's been?
When I go through the 53-man roster, and Belichick is the best in the business, yes, if he gets a journeyman left guard, can he show him some things technique-wise, him and Dante Scarnecchia? Or have they had another player in a similar situation that they can adapt to and show him some things that, you know something? He's not that good. We'll have a left tackle help him. We'll have a fullback in the game to be able to help him. We'll bring another tight end to be able to help him. We'll do a lot of smoke and mirrors where people won't know. You can't attack that guy. We're not going to drop Brady back 50 times. Every position on the team Belichick can do that for, except the kicker. Because the kicker, outside the long snapper and the holder, he's a man on the island. He is by himself. So all that intel, all that knowledge that Belichick has that he puts into winning every single game, he's not going to be able to help. You said some of the kickers that he's been there?
Oh, since
the kickers they're trying out.
Oh, Blair Walsh is one of them.
How's he going to scrub their brain? Because all of them got awful memories, right, as far as being a kicker in this league.
It's why they're unemployed. I mean, listen.
The reason they're not on a team.
The reason
anymore.
They're not on a – there are 32 teams in the league. I think there's probably 75 people that have the athleticism, the requisite leg talent, to be a quality NFL kicker. There's only about 15 that have the talent to go along with the mentality. The mind is what ruins kickers is they get in their own head. It's not usually that I just can't. 45 mm-hmm. is his limit. Once mm-hmm. If you are in NFL tryouts, it means in tryouts you look great. I'm sure mm-hmm. almost all these guys are going to try out and they're going to look great. The reason the Patriots, one of the reasons, they've been so fortunate and so successful over such a long period of time is they have gone essentially uninterrupted with two all-time greats mentally at that spot.
And Belichick has made special teams a priority.
Yes.
That's where Urban Meyer learned about special teams being a priority. That's where Nick Saban learned about special teams being a priority, knowing that if I can win that third of the game, that's why he has left-footed punters. No one else got left-footed punters. Why? Because the spin of the ball. He knows it gives him an advantage with guys returning it because they're not used to seeing that. So his overall intel and the lack of being able to, I can't help this guy after I sign him. And then the other thing, what about Patriot Nation? You, Jenna, your spouse, your partner, you guys cheer for the Patriots on a regular basis. What about when the kicker trots out there and he misses a kick? Do we throw our arms around him? I know when Josh Gordon came, oh, the Patriot Nation threw their arms around him. What about AB a couple weeks ago in Miami? Mm-hmm. All those Patriot fans. So it becomes very, very difficult for this player. Is he the one going to cost them a championship? Like, this is an important position on the team, and they've dominated with special teams for years. So for me, this is problematic.
We think of Adam Vinatieri as a longtime pet. Adam Vinatieri played 10 years for the New England Patriots. Steven Gostkowski's been there for 14. They have played more games in the last 20 years without Tom Brady than they have without either Vinatieri or Gostkowski as their kicker.
Wow.
They have more experience. If you heard that Brady was out for the season, they'd be cooked. But if you heard Brady is going to be out a few weeks, they have things to go to that have been successful, either the year he blew his ACL or the year he was suspended. Both years, 11-5 and 3-1, those 2 years, so they went a combined 14-6 in those 20 games without Tom Brady. They have things they can go to. The kicker, you're just hoping. And this is where, come the playoffs, the Ravens and the Chiefs are probably, I think, 3-2-1. Most people have it ranked as far as Ravens, Chiefs, Patriots, or maybe have Patriots, Chiefs flipped. The Ravens have the most accurate kicker in NFL history, Justin Tucker. The Chiefs have the most accurate kicker of the last 4 years, Harrison Butker. The Patriots had the most accurate kicker of the last 15 in mm-hmm. Steven Gostkowski. Now they got a guy. And when you're trying to win games, how did they beat the Bills? Great special teams, block punt, not necessarily great kicking, and defense. Now that element is I don't want to say it's gone, but it's a question mark. And you mentioned we've talked about so many injuries to the Patriots. There's an element of the Patriots are like the NFL's supervillain. And even in the horror movies, you lop off enough body parts and eventually Freddy Krueger can't come and get you. Yeah.
Like they become normal.
The left arm might have been the center. Mm-hmm. The right arm might have been Isaiah Wynn. Well, now all of a sudden they've lost both legs. And I'm just curious how they, what mm-hmm. Patriot magic they can do with the kicker position.
And when you take the kicker out of it, it affects more than just special teams. Now all of a sudden the offense changes a little. Now all of a sudden you're going for it on fourth down. Now all of a sudden your whole scheme changes when you approach a game. Am I right?
You're so right. But if the offense does decide to go for it because they don't have a kicker that's dependable, what kind of message does that send to the kicker? Like, the kicker is not the most mental tough guy in the locker room. A lot of reason why we don't say anything to him. The coach tell you, the kicker missed a kick, don't you say nothing. Carter, shut your mouth, because I will say something spicy to him. You getting paid this week? Just on my way by him.
Of course.
On into the cafeteria. They are not the same. So does it change the approach of Brady and the offense, Josh McDaniel? Once we cross the 50, Jenna, do we get more aggressive? That's a real question now without having that dependable, oh, that's 3 points. Because Belichick, he prides himself on playing games the right way. And when you don't know if your kicker, what he's going to do, how do you respond to that?
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Joined now by WWE superstar Roman Reigns.
How are you doing?
Good to see you.
Hey, Roman, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Goodness gracious.
Really,
man,
well.
You all corporate.
I like it.
It's a different look, right?
Absolutely.
Almost unrecognizable, but it's great. All right, well, we're super excited. SmackDown's tomorrow night. What does it mean for you and the whole WWE roster for SmackDown to be moving to Fox?
We're so proud. You know, I wish I could say, you know, this is all happening because of Roman Reigns and the current roster. But to be honest, it's our 20th anniversary. So just that alone, all the hard work that we put in to develop this production to, you know, all the hard work and just learning everything along the way, I think it makes for a great partnership with Fox. You know, to be on that level of production, to be able to put, you know, live events together like that and celebrate sports like we do. I think it's going to be awesome.
If people don't know, there's a Raw roster, there's a SmackDown roster, and there's going to be a draft the following Friday on SmackDown. I'm curious for you as a superstar, what's that process like and what's the level of anxiety as far as where you're going to be drafted to?
Anxiety, that's a good word. It's tough because, you know, we get so used to the schedules that we're in. Especially now in this time with Fox going to Fridays, mm-hmm. It's changing a lot of things up for us. But I think also the fact that we are 52 weeks a year, there's no off season for us. So it breaks up the monotony. It gives us something to change up to. And I think it does a lot for the fans as well. It changes up the rivalries. It switches up the matchups. So you get to see a little bit of, you know, a different setup, but a similar feel.
A number of the superstars WWE have come from a past life of football. We know about The Rock playing there at the University of Miami. A lot of people don't know about your football career playing at Georgia Tech there in Atlanta with what I consider to be one of the greatest receivers ever, Calvin Johnson. How did that preparation prepare you for this next career?
Oh, completely. You know, and especially just being at Georgia Tech within a city, Atlanta, you know, it makes you grow up really quick being in a market like that. But it was really nice to be around studs like Calvin, you know, men who learned it from a very early age, which kind of complements his upbringing, his parents. But yeah, that's what was so phenomenal about being with Calvin and just players of that caliber, which there aren't many. You're one of them. But he was just always on the field. He brought no problems to the table. He was always positive. Now, all positivity with him.
Now, you have a little rematch coming up with Eric Rowan.
That's look right.
Now, are you going to take some of that, what we consider, oh, I'm going to get me some get back in this matchup you have against him?
There's no better place than tomorrow night. SmackDown,
right.
20th anniversary, the big switch to Fox. That's the place to handle your business. So, and trust me, I got a lot to handle. It's been a long time coming. He's a big boy. He belongs on the line somewhere, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
He's a tackle somewhere, but yeah, I'm coming and we're not playing around.
You've main evented multiple WrestleManias. I'm just wondering if you have we talk about lists all this time on the show, a top five, a top three, a top memory of the past couple of years that stands out for you?
To be honest, with this job and this career, you know, we're just constantly moving into the next show. We're constantly thinking about tomorrow. You know, we've run shows for 100,000 people. We've run shows for 5,000 people. So for me, everyone thinks of the WrestleManias, but to be honest, sometimes it's the small shows. It's the live events. It's the tours that'll have the most vibrant crowds. But
yeah.
For me, about 2 years ago, I think it was, we had a small live event in Lille, France, of all places, and they were just electric. I was going through a little bit of a loss in the family. I had lost my brother that year, and it was just really nice to be out there with some coworkers and to experience that energy. And I'm telling you, it really lifted my soul at the time.
Right. Give us a little insight. Less than 48 hours before you go into the big event, what's it like as you get your mind and your body to be able to do what you need to do?
You know, for me, it's just muscle memory. You know, I'm so used to it's conditioning for me. You know, like I said, we don't have an off season, so you kind of stay in that groove, you know, that mid-season mm-hmm. groove. You have to stay in that. So for me, you know, we have great opportunities like this. You know, I'll be on Thursday Night Football tonight.
Oh,
and then
nice.
Be jetting over to the West Coast to get to L.A. So I'm so used to just running and gunning that it just keeps me busy. It keeps my mind loose because I'm going from task to task. And by the time I get to L.A., it's just going to be muscle memory from there. It's just going to let my instincts and let my physical, you know, nature take over.
Real quick before you go, if I may, for people that have been following wrestling, they know your story. Your rise has been unbelievable. And watching you take on the mantle, you mentioned The Rock as a former football player. The Rock, there was a period of time, was the face of WWE. Roman Reigns, now the face of WWE. You've done a great job with it. Congratulations,
Thank
man.
Thank you so much.
Really, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's a nice soup, right?
Thank you.
It's a nice
have
soup.
Fun on Thursday Night Football tonight.
I appreciate that.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming in. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.